Hello again, everybody. This is James Bartley, and you're watching and listening to the Cosmic Switchboard Show. Today, our very special guest is Annalee Cummings. Annalee Cummings is a survivor of organized extreme abuse and non-consensual medical experimentation. Born to parents who met while studying for PhDs at the Galton Institute for Eugenics in London, England, she grew up on the fringes of the scientific community, working on the forefront of the global eugenics agenda in the post-World War II era. Taken all over the world by her mother, a leading pediatric geneticist and eugenics researcher, she survived over two decades of experiences in the belly of the beast of government facilities and covert laboratories, including the University of California, the National Institutes of Health in Washington, D.C., Los Alamos National Laboratories in New Mexico, as well as countless eugenics conferences held worldwide, including one orchestrated by the World Health Organization. Along the way, she was forced to engage with prominent political figures, scientific intelligentsia, and well-known media celebrities. Her journey to comprehend her childhood as a survivor has been extremely complex and fraught with harrowing challenge, as it has largely laid behind amnesic barriers of trauma-based mind control and dissociative identity disorder, an evolutionary defense mechanism and mental injury that creates a highly structured and personality system which can only result from intense physical and psychological torture endured since early childhood. On her healing journey, she has traversed beautiful but rugged wilderness landscapes to ultimately find a place of internal stability, soul integrity, and spiritual selfhood, from which she now advocates for justice for herself and the millions of others who have been used by these black projects, which seek to utilize life force, in particular human genetics and psychic abilities, for their own gain. So, without any further ado, Annalee Cummings, welcome to the Cosmic Switchboard Show.
Thank you, James. It's been a long time coming. We've worked for this for a while.
Yes, I'm looking forward to this. So many of the things touched on, and normally I don't, read a long bio, but there was so many nuggets and key data points in that bio of yours that need to be addressed. Like, for example, nobody asks, why does Los Alamos, the Department of Energy, why are they involved in the Human Genome Project, of all things, mapping out, studying, exploiting the latent metaphysical properties of DNA so they can sync it up with the alien technology they've been working with all this time? But that's another story. See, when one really does a deep dive on this stuff, what you went through is, this is epic. This is a storytelling here of a chronology of events, which, in my view, hasn't been done too often, because we, those of us who do the real research, know that the Galton Institute, Francis Crick, the discoverer of the DNA, all that was tied into a eugenics program to create, from their standpoint, a perfected hybridized human, essentially. So, Annalee, tell us about your childhood, your upbringing, and what it was like with your family. Give us a background picture of who your parents were.
Yeah, well, thanks, James. I just wanted to say, to sort of play into what you just said, the irony is so the Darwinians and the Galton Institute came out of the Darwin's old laboratory. Their whole thing was they were searching for the missing link, right? So, the irony is that with all of the ways in which I was used and just followed along with this stuff and then utilized myself as well, I would like to I've, you know, as I had to do the research and came along with this, I was like, wow, am I the missing link? Like, do I have the missing link here? You know, because that was this profound sense of like, oh my gosh, I've got to heal to where I can even speak about this because the piece of light I have to share with others who have endured this is, gonna bring together a lot for other people. So my story with my parents, they are both multi-generational trauma and abuse survivors themselves. So this makes me third generation. On my mother's side, she's from South Africa. Her father was in World War II fighting in the tunnels under Egypt for the South African army on behalf of the British forces. And the tunnels under Egypt, that's a whole other show. You've done that show, right? Like with different people, but there's a very important connection there with the occultism, Egyptian occultism, and then of course you could go into the alien technology. But he was there doing that. Meanwhile, she was very ill with our shared genetic blood disorder. She was kept in institutions in South Africa in the 40s, and experimented on to try and help her heal. But you can't endure isolation from your family and repeated medical torture and procedures without dissociating. So there is that history. She later goes on and decides to become a pediatrician. She went to University of Pretoria, and then she writes to Lionel Penrose, then the director of the Galton Lab, and goes to London, England, and begins her PhD after getting her MD in pediatrics in human genetics. So she clones our disorder as part of her thesis project, and meanwhile meets my father. My father, his background is that he is from Canada. And his family, his father came back from the Battle of Vimy in World War II, very bloody battle in France as an artilleryman, and the concussive brain injury maybe caused some kind of injury, but he also was just very violent and had a lot of emotions that were never worked with. So he was sexually abusive to his daughter and violently physically abusive to his son. And then my father participated in that as well with the sexual abuse with my aunt. So he goes to McGill University at the same time that Ewan Cameron was there, and he was in the Department of Biology and Genetics. He did some wheat genetic stuff and bird migration studies. And then I'm not sure if he was involved with the Cameron stuff, but I just have to look at the data and look at my experience and go, this is a, we're pretty close there. So possibly, I don't know. He then goes to the Galton. They meet. He sort of stalks my mother, and she gets her PhD. He does not, because he's deemed too dangerous for the eugenics projects based on Harry Harris, the director of the Galton, who took over from Penrose. So, Harry Harris is an interesting guy. I'm just now getting into an area of my own understanding where there's actually been a lot of Project Paperclip type projects, and everyone always thinks of this as the Nazis brought over to the US after the war. However, there have been paperclip project aspects that were not just Germans. And I believe that Harry Harris, he had affiliations with the British Air Force and some kind of MI6, although that research, when I first came upon it in about 2011, has now disappeared itself off the web. So I can't find that anymore. But he then goes to University of Pennsylvania. So with that kind of parental background, and they're both wanting to go into human genetics and eugenics, it was quite the setup, right? I mean, on a soul level, I have to say, at what point did I see that this was what was going to happen and choose to come into embodiment for a very, it had to be an act of extraordinary compassion, because what I have lived through is, the hell realms. So, where do you want to go from there with that little
Yeah,
setup?
just a quick point about what you talked about. That was the ultimate karmic infiltration. That was a very ballsy, pardon my Anunnaki thing, for your oversoul and you to decide that you would literally be born into the belly of the beast, as it were. And getting back to the South African connection, that just reeks of old world Rothschild. South Africa railroad ties, because that was all part tied up with the British Empire. Of course, that plugs it right into MI6, SIS, and it plugs it right into the Tavistock Institute. So it would be no surprise that your mother, coming from that perspective, and your father are already predisposed towards violence anyway. It would somehow, of all places, wind up at McGill as well. You see where kind of the twain meets. Now, what are your memories like, the safe memories that you can recall of your girlhood? What was it like Like, give us an example of what seemed to be a normal day, a normal abuse-free day in your house, and contrast it with these other times when things went kind of pear-shaped, right? Was it strictly, for example, a laboratory, clinical form of abuse, or was there like cult abuse aspects to it? You mentioned the Royal Air Force earlier. Definitely, yeah, let's just take it from there, and please, wherever direction you want to go with it.
I mean, so the memories are, this was all just life to me, and it begins before birth. I was conceived while they were at McGill. They both went back to McGill University, and my mother did a postdoc there before she came to the United States, and the Mount Sinai Hospital in New York City, where I was born. So it begins before birth. So this starts to encode. If you look at the material from Svali, she's on, or that person's on, WordPress with Svali Speaks, who that person was an abusive programmer who has, turned, and chosen to share. And so, they describe procedures where they're poking a fetus that's still in a mother to simulate rape to the fetus. That's the impression that it will get. Okay. So I don't know if that happened, but certainly if you're looking in an investigation with means, motive, and opportunity, I can't speak to motive, but means and opportunity, certainly they had all of that, all the medical procedures. So, in terms of getting my early memories back, they really begin around age 4. They vary from, specific programming instances where they're all put together as a game, right? This has to be, children learn through games. So if you're going to entrain, it has to be something that the child is already motivated and willing to do, right? Because this is a distortion of your own will to turn it back on itself to then be able to proceed in ways that are not even, that are against survival instincts. So it would be games of playing hide and seek where I would be, the suitcase would be left out and I would, oh, get in the suitcase and then cover it up and then it would be locked and then he would walk around and then he would set it down and let me out, progressively increasing to where I was able to withstand being transported in a suitcase with it locked for periods of time to get me in and out of locations. In terms of medical stuff, playing with me violently in the house, swinging me, I had my, arm dislocated, but then they don't take me to the doctor's office. Okay, so the Mount Sinai Hospital was right across the street from where we lived on the Upper East Side of the New York City. We're just down from the Met Museum, well known in this genre of the darkness that goes on in the Met Museum. So there's no reason why they couldn't have taken me to the doctor. So yes, that. And then because I have this blood disorder, one of the features is that I have a very enlarged spleen. So even at age 4, they were interested in this. So remembering being in the doctor's office at Mount Sinai, and I have to lay sort of upside down partly so they can palpate my spleen, but then it's not just one person, it's this medical student and this medical student. I don't want this. Well, these people have to learn and you have to teach them. And so this is encoding to allow unwanted touching by many people over and over and over. Okay. So if you're going to get into child rape, that's how you encode it. You encode it first in the hospital, medical, and then it can go elsewhere, and you're meanwhile being trained to move around in suitcases and stuff. The narrative has to be told to you. So the narrative I get told is always, oh, well, in World War II in Germany, there was this little girl and she had to hide in a laundry basket and the lady got her out and it was for her protection. And so she was able to get out to safety because she hid in the laundry basket. So the story I'm allowed to know that gets repeated often and often, the encoding of safe is this is the story. But that's not my story. My story had to be dredged out and, sobbing wreck on the floor, vomiting, don't know where I am, don't know what day it is. I have two children of my own now. I don't know who they are. I don't know why they're approaching me. I speak in a child voice. I mean, the absolute ringer to get some of these memories through. But for other people who have endured this, I'm able to tell this without, losing my shit in front of James because the emotional content has been processed. I have processed that and now I just have the awareness. So the whole thing as this is done to a child, it's creating neurodevelopmental delays. Okay, so DID, which is the condition I live with due to the procedures that were done to me, it's a mental injury. It is not an illness. Okay, and this can only be done usually before the age of 5, but it has to be done in early childhood. So all this stuff with MK Ultra of wanting to create, the perfect, you're going to tell the truth about some operation without all that is just bollocks, okay? Because this has to be done to a child. So this is children who are being targeted by governments and planned to be worked for their entire lifetime in service to the empire. And that's what they were looking for. So when I talk, there are certainly other people who have been experimented upon this. Ted Kaczynski, for instance, when he was at his time in Harvard for his mathematics degree there. Okay. I'm not saying it doesn't happen to adults, but I'm saying the ones that they want to keep, the ones that you see all over the political stuff who are very religiously devoted to their masters, okay. How does that even happen? It happens because they've been conscripted since the earliest days, okay? And I would argue that there's many people who are on the forefront of the American political scene who I would say have a high likelihood that they too were accessed early on and are continuing that because they never got free. And it takes a lot. So where do you want to go from here?
You mentioned Los Alamos as well as other facilities you've been to. Around what time frame did you, I suppose, did you live in New Mexico at that time in Albuquerque or Santa Fe somewhere, or were you just brought there? Were you flown in or whatever the case may be?
So the little the I'll just go quickly with the timeline because I was in a lot of places and we kept moving, okay? So born in New York City, then we moved to Orange County, California in the 1980s, and my mother has a professorship at the University of California, Irvine. She's become a principal investigator for her own genetics laboratory, as well as I think it might have been a little later that this was set up when we came back from Washington, D.C., but she became the director of the California Newborn Screening Program. Okay, so that was the earliest rollout of getting all infants in the state of California initially screened, supposedly for PKU. That was part of the project she did with Penrose at the Galton. It was very easy to roll that out as a benevolent thing because a child who has PKU, if they don't get a special diet, will end up with brain damage and neurodevelopmental delays, which she is considered an expert in neurodevelopmental delays. What do I have? I have DID. It's only now being understood that that is a delay of that variety. Okay, so we're there in Orange County, and then there's a divorce, and she and I alone go to Washington, D.C. for a year while she's on sabbatical under the director of Anthony Fauci. Years of directorship of the NIH, and she's working for NIH NIM, the National Institutes of Mental Health, doing fetal alcohol syndrome stuff. So I'm held in locked confinement in her lab on weekends. She's sampling me. She is doing the blood sampling, okay? It's her. It's not someone else. It's her. And I need her for food, shelter, comfort, and it's all being denied, but then she's using my blood as a cross-reference for some reason against these fetuses. They were largely Native American fetuses from mothers who had multi-generational trauma and alcoholism, and then their children weren't going to survive, so the pregnancies were terminated, and then the NIH gets the bodies of these babies, and she's doing these experiments on them. Cross-reference with my blood. So there's that. Then we go back to Orange County. And when we get to Orange County, this is when things get really interesting because by then I'm 9. I've had a year in Washington, D.C. So at Washington, D.C., there's not only the experiments in her lab, that's the eugenics component and the blood sampling, but every weekend I am worked at the Smithsonian Institute. So The museum piece has been huge at every single place I was taken over the years. It's always got museums in it. I was taken to London, England, to the Galton when she was doing stuff with them. She did the tuberous sclerosis gene mapping project there with assistance from people there. And Tavistock is nearby. I have wondered if Tavistock was involved, but I don't have any direct correlation of that, except for one instance, being involved in a riot in Trafalgar Square and having some very strange memories with that. So I won't go into that here. If you want to hear me describe that, you can listen to me talk to Charlie Robinson on macroaggressions. But then we go back to California, and while we're there, she is on the Bill Clinton Human Gene Mapping Project, right? And we are going into Utah, which has a huge Mormon population. Okay, so the Mormons are really coming into the forefront right now. I won't go into that why, but they have wonderful genealogy records. Okay, so their temple in Salt Lake City has all the genealogy of the Mormon families who escaped, the anti-pedophile push that happened in the East Coast, and then they move out to Utah on the wagons, and they know everyone who's part of this. And because they have the written genealogy and, of course, incest as part of their thing, we're going there and we're sampling these very large Mormon families, blood sampling, to try and figure out the genealogy of the tuberous sclerosis probe gene distortion. Okay, so this causes mental retardation and developmental delay in various stages of, extremity. But then when that, I mean, this was over several years. It's always at like Thanksgiving and Christmas when these big Mormon families get together. Of course, I don't get to have that. I have to be sampled and demonstrate to the kids that it's not going to hurt to have my blood taken. I have to do the family histories because it's just the two of us working this. I'm having to read the maps to get to these houses in the middle of, every town starts with, oh, Ogden, Orem, Provo. It all sounds the same. Or be left in the hotel room alone, no way to call her, no way to contact her, no food, no water, not allowed to leave, so that kind of trauma programming, or on site with her. And then at the culmination of that, we go to Los Alamos National Labs, as you mentioned, known for doing weapons research. Okay, so weaponization, and we're doing blood work on a family history of people known to be incestuous pedophiles, and they're tracking the genetics of that. Okay, so it wasn't until years later when I started to get into the John Krakauer stuff under the banner of heaven, reading that for my own interest, that I was like, wait a minute, this is really tying into all this weird stuff. But I couldn't get through my own trauma memories of having endured that for quite a long time. So we were at Los Alamos, always on a weekend. We go behind the razor wire fence into this genetics lab, and I'm locked in a guy's office. And then I don't know if anything happened there. I flop, which means the five fear states: fight, flight, freeze. That's temporary till you figure out a better option. And fight or flight really doesn't work. Flight is the dissociation piece. Flop is when your body has decided you're just going to die, so it'll anesthetize you sort of to go into a less painful death state. And then fawn, which is, oh, I love you. I'm going to be so great and I'm going to be perfect so you don't, kill me, right? So a lot of America is stuck in fawn right now, trying to like, yes, it's a fear state. Just understand it. Your desire to keep doing the right thing and get your job and go to work and pay your taxes, that's fawn state. Okay, you're in a fear state and accept that. And I'm so sorry. Truly, I'm truly sorry that this is what is happening because I lived it for so long. So then we go to the museum, and I am programmed at the museum, the Los Alamos National Laboratory Museum in town. I'm not allowed to go eat. I'm not allowed to do anything. We have to go there. And it wasn't until 2020 when I started to work the museum piece of memory. And I was like, there's these two men, and they're standing there, and there's this red phone, and I have to answer the red phone, and it's going to tell me the codes. And my therapist is like, you're fucking crazy, Well, I go and I look on the Los Alamos National Labs Museum site, and they're is a statue of Oppenheimer and Fat Man and Little Boy, right? The commander, the military commander at on
General
the
Leslie Groves.
Manhattan.
General Leslie Groves.
Is it? Yeah. And there's statues, and then there's a little seat, and you can pick up the phone, and you can hear their real voice recordings of like that they had, you know, of them making phone calls or whatever that they've allowed as part of the museum. And so what I want to go over here for people is that they layer the programming in, okay? And I've mentioned this before, but there's the piece you're allowed to know about. And then there's the piece underneath that you're not allowed to know about, but it's going to keep coming up, okay? Because the spirit, your will wants to be free. You want to know. You can't, your body remembers, okay? But so they keep it on with a lid. An example of how this would happen is think about the 7/7 London bombings. At the same time as that was happening with the bombings in the tube, there was actually a exercise going on with the first responders in the area, and there's a picture of a London bus that says, you know, something related to the bombings on that day. So then there's that confusion with 9/11. We saw it again. There was a, you know, an exercise in progress with all law enforcement in the area, and so then that made it very difficult for them to determine and scramble pains in the correct direction to respond to the actual situation. Okay, so understand that. So when other MyLabs or people who are experiencers are trying to work through their memory and they keep hitting that top cap, don't throw it out. Okay, respect your top cap because there's times when containment is incredibly important. As part of my healing, I do a lot of art therapy, and I make all kinds of containers when I can't do anything else but just deal with the shit, right? Because it's an emotional thing. Allow that cap to exist because sometimes you need to hold it in, but see it for what it is. See, oh, okay, I was told that we had to go to the museum. What's underneath that? And then you may be able to have more emotional content. Get yourself off the stage of the emotional content by allowing it to clear. Allow yourself to feel, move it through. Have your day where you call out of work if you're still working, or have your day vomiting on the floor. Have it every day for 5 days a week for 3 months on end, like I did with that piece of memory. You know, do what you need to do, and then you'll be able to see what's underneath. So the way that some of that was done with me. Is that okay if I segue into another piece of programming and how they do this?
Please,
Or do
whatever you're
yes.
comfortable with, please.
Okay. So I kept having this memory of we would be in her labs at the University of California in Irvine, and I would have to go there on Saturday or after school or whatever. And she had two rooms. One was a cold room, one was a hot room. In the hot room, she has like all these tanks of cells in these little flasks, and she's pipetting in and feeding them and moving them into other dishes and stuff. It was quite hot in there, like think hot yoga room kind of thing, right? Like over 100 degrees Fahrenheit. And then there's a cold room that's very, very cold, like sub-zero. And there's other experiments are done in there, and there's a bench in that. So then we would go back and forth, and when you're hot and you're sweaty, and then you go in the cold room and you're already sweaty, so you start to get colder much faster, right? So that's the part was the cap that I was allowed to know. But underneath that, I started to get all this stuff of like I was having, you know, would couldn't tolerate any kind of hot weather, but I liked to be in the desert and all this. And I remembered finally I got the piece back where I'm in a tank top, little shorts, moon boots, sort of like the Napoleon Dynamite boots. When I saw that dance scene, I was like focused on the boots because I was like, oh my God, I had those. Where did I have those? You know, like you're with DID, you're just like trying to find your pieces of memory, and it's can be very agonizing and frustrating for a while until you just learn to be like, okay, I don't know what that is, but we'll look for it later. Bookmark. And I was held in those some kind of room, a hot room and a cold room, and I have to do 2 minutes hot, 2 minutes cold, 2 minutes hot, 2 minutes cold. And when you're hot, you have to have your arms out like Truvian Man, you know, the Da Vinci Code, so you perspire and your body heat, you know. And then
Just
when
to
you're in the
interject
cold
real
room,
quick, just to interject, how old were you and what time frame was this again?
The hot cold experiments were probably from ages 10 to 13. I don't know if they were done at UC Irvine. I think they were because that's where the cap is. But for some reason, right now, as we're talking, it's part of why doing these interviews is helpful to me. When we're trying to get to the New Mexico piece, I'm getting a piece there. So, yeah,
Please
ages
continue.
10
I
to
just want
13.
to, in my head, I just want to get a picture of what you looked like at the time, but please continue.
So I was very thin, they keep you hungry, right? Like all the models, because it's classical conditioning. If you're a little bit hungry, you're always really willing to do it, and food is a great motivator when you're being tortured. So yeah, the hot cold experimentation, the programming piece, the mind control piece did not come back till very recently. Because it was always held on with the cap of, oh, well, I remember sitting with mother at the bench in the cold room and the hot room. What clicked it for me was there was a snow monkey poster on the wall outside of the hallway where those two lab things were. And the man who was the principal investigator there is dead now. His name was John Wasmuth. He supposedly died of suicide. Well, when I started to look into suicides and deaths of targeted individuals, I was like, and then I thought it was this other man. And then they'll often do this. You'll think that someone has died. And then they're not dead. You figure out that they're not dead. And then, of course, your belief structure completely implodes on itself. You're like, I was wrong.
They even do that en masse to the mainstream public, but please continue.
Oh, yeah. Like, I was wrong. So, this other guy, Ken Dumars, is still alive. He was a eugenicist that came out of England and then went to the University of California. I was convinced that Ken Dumars was dead, and then I called. They had said there was a number listed on, the website, and I called and I heard his voice. And I was like, no way, I'm so wrong. I called. This was in 2009, 2010, when I started to like really like do my homework and like get in there and nitty-gritty do the research. And it imploded. Well, it wasn't until I saw the snow monkey in my mind, and then I remembered Wasmuth's lab, and then I remembered him, and then from there I was able to. So for other people who are experiencers who are dealing with trauma memory and are trying to understand how to navigate, I want to share with you, be kind and patient with yourself and understand that it's a very slow process that's best undertaken organically. Do not force it. You have already been forced to do things against your will long enough. So don't force your will now. Let it come up as it will. And understand that the dot connecting of pieces is going to be so uniquely yours and will make no sense to anyone else. But I think there's a flow that James and I have of this story. I know I'm a little all over the place. That's because there's more than one of me speaking right now. But you will be able to put it together. So be patient and hold those treasured moments of the moon boots from the Napoleon Dynamite. Why is that? The phone and the two figures, and understanding that I was probably drugged. And that's why those two statues and the phone seemed so real. Like I thought I was experiencing Oppenheimer reading from the Bhagavad Gita right in front of me, but he was just a plastic statue. And this is a museum. Where was the programming done? It was done there. Why? Because they have all these objects and stuff. There's a great article by a man named Brian Moss called Disinformation and DID, The Politics of Memory. And in that, he not only goes into a lot of the historical details, but he is a therapist who's worked for over 30 years with survivors from the mind control projects. And he details in there some of these things that I'm describing that it's like, it doesn't make sense until you come onto the data from someone else's perspective that you know how they did it. So understanding how often I had been drugged, if we're in a hotel room in Utah and I can't go that day, oh, here's your vitamins in the morning. We'll get one order from the hotel room. They bring it room service. She'll just eat the toast because she's going out. She can get something else. I get the rest of it. And then, oh, take your vitamins. Well, there's a little pink pill in there. It wasn't till years later when I had my own kids and was struggling to drive around with them because they would cry. She's like, oh, well, just give them Benadryl. And I realized she wanted me to drug my kids with Benadryl. when she needed me to get around with them. What did she do to me? Benadryl, Sudafed, Actifed. They're just over the counter, allergy medicines, but they're very soporific. And if you need a kid to just shut up and sleep. And now they're showing this in daycares and stuff, that the daycares are doing this in the US. There's been several notable cases. So be patient with yourself, because the pieces will come, and they will come, and you have to have an archival mind. Store your data and just be patient. So where do you want to go next?
Just a quick point, and then just lead up to the Los Alamos aspect, and then that'd be a good time for a break. A quick point: everything you talked about from the beginning, th there's so many correlations. For example, getting messed with in the womb—that's what the ETs do. That's what warlocks do. That's what, well, all evil beings tend to do, is muck with us while we're still in the womb. Helga Morrow, a dear friend of mine, who I since recently found out has passed away. When she was 8 months in her mother's womb, her father's geneticist friend, an expatriate, German exile, right, working, go figure, with the aircraft companies, which morphed into the aerospace corporations later, injected the belly of Helga's mother when she was 8 months in there with a long needle, went straight into Helga's, well, 8-month-old body. And she found out about it. Helga found out about it because she overheard her mother and father arguing ferociously in the kitchen one day when she was like a teenager. It's like, why did you let them do that to me? Well, the stated reason was to make Helga more intelligent and more psychic. And boy, howdy, did that pan out. Her father, Dr. Frederick Augustus Kepars, was involved in these deep black weird science programs with aliens. Going back with his involvement with the Glenn L. Martin Company, and he worked with Dr. John Von Neumann, et cetera. So, point being, they'd mess with us in the womb. Secondly, it seems to me there has been an ongoing trend, individually and expanding out into society and civilization, of creating a general state of autism, right, within everybody. Because when you talk about, look at the focal points of research they're doing. They're doing research in substance abuse, children's disorders, violence, like the UCLA violence study program headed up by Dr. Love's Jolyn West must have been connected with UCLA, UC Irvine at some level, right? They're studying the pathologies and the genetics and the mysticism behind violent or troubled or toxic or dysfunctional traumatized behavior. Passed on generationally, but also genetically through some degree of splicing, because you were talking about how they were comparing your genetics, your blood work with that of others, these deceased children that they managed, of course, to get a supply of these kids, traumatized Native American kids, et cetera, et cetera. They were looking just for something to exploit, enhance, weaponize. So you were going to make a point. Please continue.
Yeah, okay, so Orange County, California is worth mentioning, that it was like the seat of the military industrial complex, McDonnell Douglas. Okay, so much of this source there. It's the 33rd parallel, so there's an occult tie into that. So it's important to understand that as a background. My mother is mostly primarily known for her work on autism under the CART School for Autism. And in the very early days, so this was 87 to 91 or so. She was on the forefront of the autism research and developmental delay. The man across the street from us was a pediatric physician, and I babysat his kids, and he was part of the whistleblower case I had against UCI. I addressed him in that, and no word, but he was one of the very first physicians medicating autistic children. His name's Mark Lerner. I'm just going to throw it out there. And he was the doctor who was doing the behavioral modification studies for UC Irvine, which later became the CART School. And now the CART School works with the people in chemistry who did the ozone work and got the Nobel Prize. Blake is his last name, that doctor or that researcher, you know. So yeah, then you want to get into the chemtrails and the ozone stuff and, you know, what are they understanding with the atmosphere and that. Okay. But all of this comes back to the beginning and where in my bio I talk about this is about human genetics and psychic abilities and your story that you relayed about your dear friend and being poked, okay? When you are first forming consciousness, whether it's in the womb or in that first critical 5 years of life, or as you go on to up to 10, if you are being put in a state where you are hypervigilant, hyper-aware, when is the threat going to come? I lived on the UCI campus. I had no idea who was safe, who was not. It was only safe to assume that everyone was dangerous. If you are on that level all the time, and yet at the same time in this incredibly beautiful location with like, you know, back then there were rolling fields and all these wildlife interactions I had with, you know, coyotes and watching them, you know, with binoculars and laying in the grass and hawks flying overhead and all that. If you're hypervigilant, hyper aware, and you're in those kind of environments with all this nature that, you know, clearly I'm surrounded by it, you are going to master your psychic awareness because you constantly have to be watching for emotional content with people. Is it safe to ask mother for food right now? No, she's busy. Can't be bothered. You know, I'm not going to, it's not only the relational disruption that happens from having your primary caregiver not respond and neglect and, you know, narcissistic abuse that's just constant throughout. That's terrible for people who have to live with that. But I'm talking about that's just the baseline of my existence. Then there's, is the neighbor across the street going to ask me to babysit for his kids? How good do I have to be? Can I steal food from him in the refrigerator when the kids go to sleep? How much can I eat without them knowing? But then he knows my mom. And then, you know, it's just, and the more you get ramped up like that, the more you're interesting to them. Okay,
Yes,
so
that's
when
one thing
we're
I've noticed, just to interject real quickly, from a MyLab perspective, people involved in some of these, to be sure, a lot of similarities with the trauma, institutionalized trauma from childhood and what have you. But from a adult male MyLab perspective, what I've noticed, a certain percentage of them, they're in that state, constantly heightened awareness, evaluating threat level. Some of them have impulse control issues. Some of them have domestic violence issues, right? So at times they want people like that to be in that state where they're ready
right,
to
because
lash out.
you're going to have totally inaccurate threat assessment capabilities
Yes.
initially. That's
Yes.
what they want.
That's what they want.
Inaccurate threat assessment. I will get in the suitcase and I will go because it'll be a game. Oh no, you know what? We met Walter Cronkite, one of the great CIA operatives. We met, you know, Bob Hope, one of the great USO CIA operatives. That was when I
Yeah.
was 14. Walter Cronkite at age 4, okay? You never know what you're going to walk into. And when you have that. So for people who are that adult male, MyLab, who has the impulse control issues, who has the violent aggression, okay? I see you. Have some compassion for yourself. I have compassion for yourself. It does not excuse your behavior. You may not harm another being, but no, you have been harmed and in training to that. So the first is you have to let yourself feel in a safe way. And it's going to have to be a contained way because if you've got a pressurized container that has been haunted and prodded and, you know, abducted and whatever your whole life,
To blow a
if you
gasket at some
pop
point.
off at once, you're going to blow out, right? We're
Yeah,
seeing
you're gonna
that
blow
everywhere.
out. And the thing about it too is it doesn't matter if they get locked up in solitary in some federal pen somewhere. That makes it easier for them to access. No one's gonna miss them, right? And they can still use them as often as they like out in the real world and beyond. So in the time we got left, and this has been a fascinating educational first segment for me. Do you want to talk about the Los Alamos aspect too? Because when you talk about what people don't realize is they tend to think of, unless you've really done your homework, they tend to think of like the UC college system, university system, as like a wellspring of liberal garbage, which it is, aspects of it, but it's always been plugged into the military industrial complex because it was through the University of California system that Los Alamos outsourced a lot of its work after the war. So all these places, and then you talked about Southern California, Tustin, that whole place, weird science, mind control, aliens, it's all going on there. And people don't realize it right there in Orange County, of all places. You got El Segundo not too far away, all the satellite manufacturing and downlink facilities, whatever, right? It's all there. But, just wanted to point out that the mind control that is being exerted, what it was, is a form of mechanized conjunction between the national labs that create weapons of mass destruction, and also their perception of how they can utilize the human genome and meld it with the pediatrics, et cetera, et cetera. So you have people that already have this template. I know it's going to be disappointing for some to hear, but somebody could be autistic, a child could be autistic without having had any stabs, okay? Yes, the childhood stabination schedule is responsible for a lot of that. But there are a lot of people that are born on, quote unquote, the spectrum. I had a problem trying to relate to this too, but I can see it now. And there's different forms of it, Asperger's, what have you, right? The point of relevance is there's a number of factors that come into play about why, how, or why somebody comes under that spectrum. But it's the template that allows these nefarious agencies and institutions pour in all this programming and literally
Well,
changing
it's
people
not
from
allowing
what.
them. I mean, so the autism thing, what you're looking at, this is not new, okay? Autism is a label. This is a rollout of a programming
They had to call it something. They had to call it
for
something, yes.
people, okay? Autistic kids are psychic sensitive. They have sensory processing difficulties, okay? They're incarnating on a planet that is being bombarded with a level of sensory data and harassment that is unparalleled in human history. Of course, they're going to come online as autistic. What the hell do you think our bioneurology was meant to do with all this data, right? Okay. But the autism as a name, understand that's like a brand name. That's like, Hasbro or Fisher-Price or Autism or MK Ultra. Those are all brand names that are being thrown out there. The hunting of indigo children, the hunting of psychic sensitives, the hunting of druids, the hunting of Celtics. This is not new, okay? This is
Ancestry.com. I mean, you were just talking about the Mormons tracking these bloodlines, but Ancestry.com is a classic example of all these people
yeah, this is
voluntarily
not new.
sending in
They're
the.
just honing you in, like, oh, I have a kid who has these things. Oh, great, bring them on in. Let's get them tested. Don't do that. Figure it out on your own. Honestly, figure it out on your own. I hate to say that because I know these parents are desperate in that, but I've seen this. I've seen the kids get medicated. I was like 10, 12 years old and watching this happen and going, oh no, oh no. And I've never been able to say
Yes,
anything.
and
This is not new.
no, it's not. And the point,
The academic university system was captured. This is to use a term from Professor Hamamoto, who I recently spoke to that I really like. The medical academia has been captured. It was captured a long time ago. It is part of the military industrial complex.
absolutely.
Look at
It's a
the
recruiting ground. It's an indoctrination center. And I just want to complete the point about the autism, too, because to your point, they process things differently than the way we do, right? They're so
Well,
aware and so sensitive.
speak for yourself there.
Well, what's
I'm
that?
all over the place. I said, speak for yourself there, because I process in a totally different way with the DID. Like that's its
Yeah,
own.
but see, that just adds a layer of complexity to it, right? But just from the standard baseline, there's a lot of data input stimuli, and they're trying to, process it, right? And so what the system does is, okay, this is something we could work with. So that whole syndrome had been there all along. And also, I believe that it's not just all these Ancestry.com type websites that allow these, institutions that track people and locate them, there's definitely a supernatural, non-human component that helps in finding these kids anyway. But quickly about the Los Alamos segment, and then we'll end the first segment.
So you just wanted me to finish up. I mean, I was taken there once, but I lived in Albuquerque. We lived there for the first 5 years. It's got of my kids' life. They had a, you know, a, or not even 5 years, like 3 years. But yeah, I mean, New Mexico's kind of got it all, and I was married fairly near Los Alamos. As I got older, I kept going through there. I was given a special pass to go ski in the core of the Valle Caldera on New Year's Day 1 year with my kid in the backpack, and I have this picture of myself with a giant violet beam over my head in the center of the Valle Caldera, which is just very close to Los Alamos. It's basically adjacent to Bandelier National Monument. Okay, so that whole area as a landmass and the force of Mother Earth and what she is doing as a response to what is happening in the caverns there. I mean, the dull spaces near there, many years wandering around the desert and end up there. So, I mean, but the piece about Los Alamos is I can share with people there's documented case of a weaponization program happening at Los Alamos involving the Human Genetics Project hidden out in the open. Go check their website. And my mother was doing studies on Mormon bloodlines that were known to be incestuous and thus cause these, you know, developmental delays and mental retardation. And it's no new news that, you know, that incest causes mental retardation and developmental delay. She just was able to pinpoint it to the exact gene. And when they announced that, she got, you know, huge grant money and, you know, congrats from Bill Clinton. And then they declare the Human Genome Project over fairly soon after that. Not that her experiment, you know, closed the door, but the Galton was involved in that. Los Alamos was involved with that. UC Irvine was involved with that. And then I was being taken to all of this stuff, all those locations as, you know, fly on the wall, assistant, you know, fly to the navigator with the Thomas guide in my hand. That's a joke for all the MyLabs out there. that old movie. But you know, and then worked in the labs and programmed in the labs and all this. So I can tell you, it is all connected. Everything you suspected, there's probably a really good reason why, because it is. It's all there.
Quick point about the 33rd degree parallel too. That's precisely why Jack Parsons and L. Ron Hubbard, probably Hubbard's idea perhaps, but right there in Mount Palomar, right? It's a 33rd degree latitude, and it's regarded by it was regarded by Parsons and Hubbard as being the sexual chakra of all places of the planet, just as Uluru in Australia is regarded as the heart center of the planet, right? It's just a polar opposite. But anyhow, we've reached the end of a fascinating first segment with our guest, Annalee Cummings. Annalee, if our viewers and listeners want to get a hold of you, would you like to give some contact information?
You can't get a hold of me. That's kind of the point of why I'm still standing here. But if you wanted to see some of my other work, go ahead and just Google my name. I have three other interviews out on YouTube. And if you want to see some of my writings from my circa 2012 blog, Artemisia Speaks, those are still a few of them up on the Project Avalon forum. You can look me up under Artemisia there. Most of my posts are under the genetic manipulation and mind control tabs. So hope you'll take a look at what I have, including my whistleblower testimony.
Great. And to our dear listeners and viewers out there, if you like what we do, if you believe in what we do, please go to thecosmicswitchboard.com, sign up and become a member, and we'll see you at the top of the next segment.